philosophers in space, 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 space.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your pain? Physical or emotional?
Are we sure we should be paying attention to these guys? It's like who died and left Aristotle in charge of ethics?
Plato!
Sure, we all feel alive now, but how do we know it's not all, you know, just an illusion?
Nobody exists on purpose. Nobody belongs anywhere. Everybody's gonna die. Come watch TV.
Hello and welcome to episode 40 of Philosophers in Space. Oh, I think anyway, my memory is that it's 40, but I don't know if I did 39 or if it was just implanted in, have I done any of these episodes? I don't know. Aaron, tell me, help me out.
Swallow a pill to... I mean, like Philip K. Dick, I didn't really actually have enough content for two episodes worth, so I'm going to throw it to our guest, I guess. Chasing.
Did that chasing, work? Yeah. Falling squares of things that, yeah. Weird elevators. Chasing. How's it going, Elizabeth? Back with us for a second episode in a row. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
So glad to have you, and if my memory... Well... Tell you what, I don't care if my memory's fake or real because we're doing it either way. My memory is we left off with a cliffhanger of a question last time by Aaron, which was, if an evil Arnold has done evil stuff, then becomes a kind of a new Arnold through the memory erasure process, is he still a bad person for having done the bad stuff before? Or since he can't remember it, is he a good person and we just kind of move on? Very interesting hypothetical. I mean, this excuse does not work if I get drunk and do bad things that I don't remember, I'm pretty sure. But we can talk about that. What do you think? Do you want to reset that, Aaron?
No, oh, sorry. I mean, like, you were doing great there. I was making a crack about you could end up on the Supreme Court as long as you don't remember. like, that does highlight why it seems morally problematic, right? And it also just, like, it does seem weird that, you know, if... Arnold's character had a change of heart and had switched sides and saved people at the end, we would consider him a better or redeemed character perhaps, but we would still view a little bit of mixed sort of moral judgment there because he had to do all those bad things first to get to that place. We would at least view him, I think, morally differently than if he had never done those things. But like you were sort of talking in the last episode, because he had his memory wiped and he doesn't feel causally responsible for that, he gets a sort of free pass. That might be a kind of weird sci-fi version of what we talked about with moral luck. Like if he did like an Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind thing and he wiped the memory himself because he couldn't stand to remember it, that would seem cowardly to us. But if someone does it and then he's freed of it, like he's no longer, it's a weird, like the response disappears at some point somehow.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. Elizabeth, though, I want to make sure you
I have a lot of thoughts. Like, yeah, so one I think is like, are you responsible, you know, either through getting drunk or through altering your memory, whether you're responsible for the loss of memory? That seems to matter. And the other thing I think that matters, interestingly, is that, so he's implanted with these memories of being a good guy, and he is a good guy, and it's not quite clear whether they intentionally it seems like they intentionally made him like morally like a moral person, so he didn't actually, and they just they say, oh, this was 6 weeks ago or something, so he didn't actually live that moral life that he thinks he's led that makes him be that person. And does that also, if you were inclined to give him credit, does that take away from the credit since he had no control over his own moral development?
That's interesting. You know what I was thinking of it, which I think could be maybe a little thought experiment to highlight these differences and thoughts, is like, what if, okay, so we've got evil Arnold who was working with the bad guys, and then we've got rebel Arnold who's helping the rebels, you know, and what if, let's say, what if you are like another rebel, and it turns out evil Arnold, back in his evil days when he was doing evil stuff on Mars, like it says on his business card, had a mission that involved like killing a family member of yours or something, or did something that harmed you or your family in some way. And you and here you are on the end of the movie though, and it's good Arnold, and you're like, that's the guy that killed my dad or some crap. And but then how do you feel? Like, I'm curious, how would you think about it? Like, well, shoot, is that the same guy, or he's about to help the rebels win potentially? Does that mean all's forgiven? Is he a different person? It might be an interesting way to look at the problem.
Absolutely.
How would you feel, Aaron?
I mean, I have mixed feelings because I immediately go to like applied real world versions. Mm. So like, if you had caught someone like Eichmann, but he's already developed really serious Alzheimer's and like doesn't remember anything.
Is this a 40s. Nazi or something? Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Adolf Eichmann was the, the architect, as it were. So he sat in the chair and over-explained the Holocaust to people.
That's an incredible joke. Okay, sorry.
It's really dark.
That's a really dark and incredible joke. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Thank you. Do we still try him as this horrible war criminal? Does it make sense to try a person who doesn't remember what they did? Is there still any kind of justice in that? I have a hard time making sense of what value, other than what value is there? Is it a deterrent? Like, who is it gonna deter if there's no causal connection between the person's behavior and the person being punished? Like, what is the value of that punishment other than just like a revenge fantasy at that point?
Yeah. I also think there might be a distinction when we're talking about, oh, I got so drunk. Let's say I get blackout drunk, which I don't, I don't think that's even possible for me. I usually just pass out. You hear tales or those people who like somehow are still up and doing stuff, but they're like not there and they're blackout drunk. Anyway, let's assume that happens and I do something bad. I wake up, I don't even remember it. There might be a difference though between saying, okay, that seems like I'm responsible for it because, I was the kind of person who not only made that decision, but let's even say I didn't, maybe my drink got spiked or something. I still was the kind of person who did that under those circumstances, versus when you talk about Arnold, the person he is now, I think is entirely different. Because if you look at the psychology of it, evil Arnold, this is why I wish we had more character development in this. Because why is evil Arnold evil Arnold? And then how much awareness would there be of like, well, when you have your memory wiped, you might be the same kind of character. Like, you might have the same character traits. I don't know how much of the BIOS, like the firmware of your brain stays in this process, but you might have the same traits. But maybe just psychologically, from what we know about humans, the fact that you're close to rebels, you're seeing the cost of these things, you're empathizing with them, that could make you fundamentally a different person. And so it's not really the same as like, oh, I was passed out and I did this. If it turns out that actually, if this new Arnold were to get drunk, he wouldn't do those same thing. Like, it's a different person. I kind of mixed my metaphors there. But what do you think? Is there a difference there?
I think it's an interesting question you ask in terms of a counterfactual, because you're right. It's actually, we don't know about Hauser's background. I mean, it is possible that when he sees close up the exploitation of people, and there's a whole disability thing that we can get into that I'm fascinated by, a disability rights thing. But when he sees what is happening and how unjust it is, like, maybe that is part of him that is responding to, like, maybe he did change. In saying he's so different now, we don't possibly don't give him credit for something that was continuous, and we just don't know.
Yeah, that's why I don't, because like, you would think if evil Arnold was involved enough at this high level to like concoct this plan with the bad, you'd think he would know enough about what's happening to the rebels. It would be hard to imagine that he had no, So like, I don't know, maybe, but also psychologically, if you erase the part where, I'm filling in the blanks here, but you erase the part where he grew up in a very pro-military family or culture, and like, that's the thing he celebrated, and he got him kind of into that culture. And it's sort of like how it's almost impossible to talk to anyone who's related to a police officer about Black Lives Matter, I found, like, somehow mm-hmm. they just cannot entertain the idea that maybe the job is not quite as dangerous as they think it is, and maybe they have more. Right. This is me politicizing, sorry. But, like, when you have those connections that all of a sudden you place Arnold in that experience machine or whatever, the memory erasure machine, and he doesn't have those same biases, it actually seems plausible to me that you stick him in a different set of circumstances, and it goes back to Aaron's moral luck thing. Like, all of a sudden, he could be a totally different person under those circumstances.
Yeah, and I think this all ties are in with the main gear strippy part of this movie, which is you're always trapped in this unreliable narrator problem. And that's a problem for Locke's philosophy of mind as well. I think Locke kind of took an over idealized view. He was somewhat aware that, like, obviously you don't remember everything that happened before you, but, like, there's some arguments that he doesn't really take seriously the lack of continuity of mind and memory, and that, you know, you can't, we know so much more now about how fallible memory is. And so I think these kind of movies do a great job of making us realize that, like, so much of our perception of reality is based on something that we can't even confirm. We have no way to reliably back up. We could all be in these psychotic episodes. Like you're saying, we could all be a brain in a vat kind of thing.
Well, I think maybe, Elizabeth, unless you had thoughts, I was going to bring up the thing you said before recording here, that which I thought was so brilliant, about the red pill scene. Or did you have thoughts on that conversation?
No, I was moving red pill word.
That's awesome. I don't want to steal the thunder. Why don't you say what you said before recording about that scene?
I said this was the original red pill scene.
Right. Yeah. Because and it really is. It actually is. Like, I said that, or you said that, and I thought, oh, that's funny. And then I thought about it. The more you think about it, it's like, whoa, no, it really is. Like, it's identical to that scene in some ways.
I never put that together.
If you take the red pill, then you will be experiencing the real thing. Your experiences will match the external world. Mm-hmm.
So to make sure we set it up exposition-wise, this is back in that scene where the guy who pops in, just random guy who I think somebody said is from...
He's from the recall commercials earlier.
Okay, I didn't even notice that because I only watched it the one time and maybe I'm not observant. But he's from the recall commercials. He pops into Arnold's... wherever he is, his apartment or something. I don't know where they are at that point. And he says, hey, I'm sent. You're actually sitting here in recall still. And I'm here to try to talk you out of it. Like, this is all an elaborate fantasy. It's not real life. Like, you need to snap out of it. And the way you do it is by taking the red pill in this scene that is, you know, 8 years before The Matrix, in the actual red pill scene. And we were going to talk more about this because I think we all agreed it's a really good scene. And there's a lot going on there. Who should set this up? Did you have more thoughts on this, Elizabeth? Or
well, it's interesting because we've been talking about implanted memories and personality continuity, and here is where they really introduce. I mean, this is always a possibility when you're talking about this other stuff with erased memories and whatever. But they introduce rather forcefully: you are not here right now. You are not experiencing what you think you're experiencing, and. So you could actually be a brain. They say you're back in recall, and it remains possible for the rest of the movie that that's true, you know, or it undermines the whole very idea that any of the experiences he's had, whether as Quaid or the evil guy or the guy who was a construction worker, were ever real. And you know, and then that's the note it does end on, which is, if this is a dream, whether they're not talking about personality, but they're talking about this idea of the brain in the vat, where he does not know if any of these experiences are actually happening.
Yeah.
I like in that scene, there's a couple of really great nuances that, so for example, I think it's meant to read that Arnold gets the impression that the guy is lying because he's sweating.
Because he sweats, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see this, like, it's kind of, again, it's, you know, it's over the top, him sweating because he's so sort of anxious. But
it's the ultimate bluff that he's having to make. And I think it's, I was going to say related to that, that the Arnold movie, I think it's a good scene, but the Arnold movie really makes you think that this is BS, you know, like it, because it even has, before this happens, you even see the bad guy saying, I've got a plan that'll end all this. And then like, it kind of goes to this kind of thing. So it way more appears to be a product of, you know, a plotting of the bad guy versus in the 2012 movie, which is Aaron's favorite. It's actually, I think it's way more, ambiguous if I'm remembering right. It's more, it kind of comes out of nowhere. You don't have that like, oh, here's what we'll do to throw him off. And, I think the decision isn't made, but I do love this scene because as you say, this guy is having to make the ultimate bluff. Like if it is just a plot, this guy is having to say, oh yeah, it's totally fine. If you shoot me right now, it doesn't even matter. And his sweating gives it away.
Mm-hmm. But I also love after he shoots him and she shouts at him, there's just, it's a very, it's hard to describe, but the pacing of the moments that lead to the wall exploding, it just feels, it's very symbolic of like, well, you've made your pick and you're going down the rabbit hole now. And that wall comes blasting in and the chaos starts over. And it's just, it's a beautiful juxtaposition of a very still moment. And then suddenly the chaos floods in again.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, I mean, the guy really is making the ultimate bluff, because what is harder to convince somebody of than what you are perceiving is not real? I mean, there, you know, it is sort of the most basic, you know, epistemological, you know, like, you know, I mean, where, you know, like, no, everything you're seeing and that you're actually not here. There's really, it's, you can convince people of anything other than that. And he's staking his life that he can do it.
It's par for the course on this show, but yes, I see how.
And if I may stray a little into psychology world, I think this is an interesting way to look at, one way to interpret this movie is as a description of a, like, they refer to him as having a psychotic episode, that like people on manic swings who are manic depressive, for example, are very difficult to talk out of their narrative about how they are experiencing the world and how great everything is and how they need to start taking medication again because they're not acting reasonably, essentially. And so I think one part that makes this extra creepy to me, that the Cronenberg-y like body modification mutants stuff plays up, is that like you can really easily imagine the mind twisting itself into a very creepy psychological place and there being no way to talk that person out of it. So I like that as part of the horror-y side of this a little bit.
Yeah, I've been wondering what you guys make of this. You know, we're kind of trading realities here, and we're kind of like, okay, assume that this part is true, and assume we're not assume we're not in a vat here, but assume we're in a vat here. I'm trying to make sense of this scene. I wonder if it's any different in the book. If you could let us know, because consistent with the movie, I don't know why the guy would sweat if, you know, like the movie, the 1990 movie, I think it has to just be a plot by the bad guy, but I don't know why would any of this happen if it's a brain in the vat the whole time. I don't know. What does the short story say? You know what I mean? Like I thought it was going to be totally 50-50 as to whether or not, you know, he and Arnold or the main character, I guess it's also Colin Farrell, like he's kind of just choosing which reality he wants to be in. It's not really, you know, but the way it does it in the movie, it's like the bead of sweat gives it away. How do you interpret that? I'm just curious. Like,
yeah, in the short story, it's a little different. They come for him and he escapes, and he has a tracker inside of his head that they can communicate with him directly. And what he basically does is they're like a stalemate, essentially. And so he makes a deal with them that he'll come in if they sort of pull a cipher on him and re-implant him with a better memory that'll keep him better distracted. So there isn't exactly the same kind.
So he goes all cipher. Yeah. He wants to be an actor.
And that raises another ethical question here that I'm curious for y'all about. We talked a little bit already, and we can maybe answer this some more, about whether you would personally accept implants to improve your memory. But I'm also curious.
I was going to say, I'm definitely getting implants. You're talking about something else. Sorry.
but whether you think there's something wrong with changing the memory of someone like Hauser to make them a better person. Like, is it wrong to hack someone's memory and habituate them to being a virtuous individual? Is it bad to do that artificially rather than have them build it up naturally?
Well, you know, I think that, again, this sort of goes back to the question of authenticity in terms of experiences. Mm-hmm. Like, are these experiences that you were given rather than earned? Like, is that you had a, are they yours? I mean, does that diminish them somehow? And so to the degree that someone didn't earn, and so you have this consequentialism. Of course, it would be better if everybody's morally good. On the other hand, you have this idea of morality, and unlike Clockwork Orange kind of thing, I'm not even seeing it as sort of like a fascist kind of thing. I'm seeing it as more like, did you actually earn that? And did you did you get to be a good person? I think there's a real question there.
I guess I wonder, like, I don't care particularly if someone earns their trip to Fiji. Like, doesn't matter to me if it's real or fake, as long as they're happy. And I wonder, especially from like a consequentialist perspective, why would it matter if it's authentic or not, as long as they do better from there on out?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think from a consequentialist perspective, this is just
trying to get Thomas on my side.
I think that Aaron's actually setting up for space capitalism more, in that he wants to not have to give any of his exploited workers any real vacation time. I think he's like, you don't need vacation time. Here, you're going to work 12-hour shifts, and then at night, I'm going to implant you with the memories of the excellent vacation you just got back from every day, every single day, by the way.
I mean, that is a really viable idea. It brings up something else.
Trademark that, philosophers in space. Capitalism.
Right. As long as you're promoting pleasure overall, right? Utilitarians would be happy. It seems fine.
Imagine if we came across that, though. Like, we find out, you know, because we're all pissed about Amazon right now and how they're abusing their workers. Let's imagine we just find out, like, oh, no, hold on. They're not actually unhappy. Every night they've been, and forget all the ethics of this part, but every night they've been jumping in voluntarily. They volunteered to hop in that experience machine. And every day they think they just got back from a great vacation. So for all they know, they don't even work one day in a row. It's just every day is the day after vacation. How do we feel about that?
No, I was just going to say, it occurs to me how extra evil the guy on Mars is, because he actually has that ability to do that for his workers, and he doesn't bother to.
Like, well, it does. There's a certain amount of cost, certain amount of overhead.
I can erase memory and do pleasure, but I'm just not even going to waste time.
It's expensive. It's like one person at a time. And y'all are ugly.
Space capitalists
most of you are
have
ugly.
To capitalize. Yeah.
I mean, this does bring up something that we still have time. Maybe I could drop a little bit of.
I genuinely want an answer to that question. How would you feel about that? Somebody answer that. I'm really curious. Like, let's say you find out, you know, because I'm serious, like a labor question like that. Like, you find out it's a perfect Star Trek plot, you know, where you come across the alien planet where they're overworked and they're working every day. They're working, you know, 16-hour shifts every day. However, every day they think they just got back from a great vacation. How do you make the argument of like, well, this is exploiting labor here. This is not, you know, when they would tell you themselves, oh, no, I just got back from a great vacation.
I guess I would personally want to know, are they flourishing as a result of this? So if you could show, for example, that like the ones who are having memories, right, they get implanted whatever memories they particularly want, and it builds up their projects of worth over time. So they actually do learn how to play instruments and, you know, master art and various sciences and improve themselves in various kinds. If they get to do all of that stuff, I'm kind of okay with it.
Wow. Space capitalist for you. What do you think, Elizabeth?
Yeah. I mean, if this is their preference, then I'm, you know, if this is like they are aware and there are other options, and this is what they choose, I think it's sort of a bad thing to choose in a lot of ways. But it's that I could at least see it being sort of okay if it wasn't, but if it's really just, I'm exploiting and this is the cookie I'm giving them, you know, and that's a different story.
That's how I was thinking of it.
That's an oversimplification. It's a really good cookie. Like, we're not talking about just like one Chips Ahoy here. Like, if we're talking about like getting to
in
live
in some ways,
a fully
it's the opposite though.
Life.
Because it's like you're just the memory of having eaten a good cookie. I don't even have to give you the cookie. It's cheaper.
I mean, it could also distract you from your personal relationships, which may be an issue. Like,
well, that's something would I was rather going be to...
Edie or my crying kids? I don't know. Yeah. If they ever listen, my crying kids, but I'm just saying.
I hear Tahiti's a really great place. Yeah.
I don't know what you were going to go on to there, Aaron, but I was had a thought related to this about whether or not, you know, when you talk about if recall were any sort of real service and assume there's like no danger or whatever for the sake of argument, is it anything you guys would be interested in doing?
I would be interested. I think that I would certainly.
What are the kinds of things you'd want to do? Like a memory of a vacation or something else?
I certainly would love anything that would allow me to quickly acquire more knowledge. So a memory of getting a PhD would be really useful about now.
Yeah, now you're talking.
Luckily, philosophy could be transferable in that format, perhaps.
Yeah. This is I know Kung Fu, which I'm, we're doing The Matrix. Yeah, absolutely. I have that. I'll
be honest. I get the most jealous in the story where he talks about how the memories are going to be more accurate than your fake memories or your real memories because your real memories fade, but these ones don't. And I'm like, I could remember all of my undergrad, that would be.
Yeah. Could they just? Okay. Well, I wasn't really going there because that seems like an obvious answer, but they don't really talk about that application of this service. And I don't know why, that's
never
kind of an oversight
of application.
Yeah, that's kind of an oversight of this story because you could just program everybody to be like the ideal person in some way or have the knowledge they need to do better, a better job, a better whatever. I wasn't really thinking about that. I was just thinking in terms of implanting fake memories, but I guess you broke it. You broke the question.
I always love when sci-fi has this one tech that makes everything, it could fix everything if it were applied in a slightly different way. That is a very Philip K. Dick feature.
Yeah.
There's actually one short story he wrote that's about a guy who can fix anything, and they bring him in to fix a super weapon, and he accidentally fixes it too good and makes an interstellar travel device instead. And so they realize that he's just made all of war obsolete by accident instead of making the super weapon they wanted.
That's funny. Because I was thinking when it comes to the fake memories thing, you had mentioned, I think it was you, Aaron, had mentioned last episode about, changing memories to make you happier in some way. And I was kind of thinking about, what if you had this recall service and forget the idea of a PhD, let's pretend you can't do that, apparently. a way of making, like, maybe you have a lot of regrets in life. You've got some regrets and there's a way that this machine is like, oh, let's replace those regrets with some better experience that you had. And I was kind of thinking through it and I was like, well, it's interesting though, that how that could affect your interaction with other people. What if you have regrets you'd love to fix, but what if you bump into that person and you have no idea, it turns out you had a bad breakup or something. Oh, well, this is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I just realized. Okay. I went into that movie. Sorry. I hypotheticaled that movie, but like, it's interesting because there might be some things you'd love to have better memories instead of in place of, but like, also, what if you run into that person? They have no idea who you are, or you have no idea who they are. Like, is that gonna? What are the ethics of that?
It would certainly be weird, and I, as a sort of leaning virtue theorist kind of person, think that I wouldn't get rid of the parts of my life that were hard, even if they were really bad, because they make me who I am, and I'd be a different person without them. I would be more inclined to like using recall for travel instead of actual travel. Mm. Like I would be fine with the holiday kind of the vacation side of things, but I wouldn't use it to like plaster over hospital visits.
Yeah. As another virtue leaning person that I have the same, that's my same, of course I'd be tempted, but I'm much more would be like, oh, I don't get out of the house much, it'd be maybe like I have a memory of a great dinner, or something like that, but not, I would definitely not get rid of, including, like memories of stuff that I wish I'd done differently in terms of either prudentially or morally, I would hesitate.
I think there could be some interesting ways to use this tech though, that could be ethical. Are you saying something else?
No, I was actually kind of going that direction. I realized I was just starting to think of this technology as like a, really good antidepressant. Like, you just, sure. I want to remember that I went outside more and like got a good walk and like read a book.
Or, you know? I mean, is there anything ethically wrong with you if you had someone who you loved at the end of their life, they hadn't gotten to do the career they wanted, they ended up having to work to support someone or something, or there were medical issues of some sort? Would it be wrong to implant them with memories that they had succeeded in the ways that they wish they had?
I mean, it seems like a lot of effort for an end of life thing. That's not.
I was actually kind of with you. If it was like, I wish I always climbed Kilimanjaro. That I'd be like that. I feel like I'm less with. Okay, now I'm at the end of my life. I'm deluded into thinking I've achieved a lot. That there seems something.
I was thinking about, you know, in terms of the bad experiences, there's certainly bad experiences that it's almost like a ripoff if I forget that I had to do it. You know what I mean? Like that one time that I got that awful food poisoning, like at this point, it's not hurting me to know that I had that awful food poisoning that one night that was just the worst. It doesn't harm me to know that. And if you erased it and replaced it with a vacation, then it's like kind of like, well, then I mean, I got through that, you know, I don't, you know what I mean? It's kind of. Yeah.
This kind of like highlights one of the main problems with this story, though, the part that you brought up, the like feature that they don't include in the Arnold version, where like you can't have any fake memories that are like any of your real memories.
Yeah.
Because like, depending on how you generalize that, that's almost all of the things you might want, like a vacation.
Right.
You've had a vacation. You've been to a beach.
Well, but you can go to a different, you know, you can have it be kind of a totally different experience.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to like go to Mars or something, it seems like.
I don't know if that. So it's was that not in the short story?
Oh, no, it is in the short story. It's the same.
Because I just thought it was a great way. It's so funny that since I hadn't seen it already, I really loved how this was set up in the 2012 movie that's everybody's official favorite. which is like, it's so nicely, perfectly ambiguous there. Cause it's like, and it's such a cool way to have it be like, oh, this guy was lying to us. He is an agent, you know, and then everybody busts in and they all get shot. I don't know. I loved it. I think you're too harsh on it, Aaron.
I think it was acceptable background noise while I was doing other things.
Oh my God. That is maybe one of the harshest criticisms. That is damning.
I show you the back of my hand.
Like you couldn't even actively hate it. You know, like you could not. You could.
I mean, it's not that like I watched this back to back with Battlefield Earth in preparation some future activities.
And that didn't even improve.
It's even available to watch Battlefield Earth.
Oh no. It turns out that one's free. A lot like the 2012 Total Recall, and unlike the good Total Recall.
The new Total Recall was free? I must have not searched the right thing. Because I rented the new Total Recall for the same price that I bought the 1990 Total Recall on Amazon. That gives you some indication. Counter argument.
That makes me happy that you.
Yeah,
bought
it doesn't.
It.
No, it didn't have a rent option.
Yeah, I bought it too this weekend because I didn't have a rental. So I'm married to it. So
I cannot tell you how many stupid movies I own that I don't even know about. Like I like from all this stuff. Let's. We're actually at time again. That's perfect timing. And in the After Dark, I think we're going to do detailed segment comparing. You know, the realism of the triple boob lady in both movies. And we're going to, you know, we'll get into that. I'm sure that's what everybody's been dying to hear. no, before we do that, we've got to say, of course, thanks again. Huge thanks to Elizabeth Pacciuto. And oh, crap. I don't think last episode we gave a chance to have you plug anything. Where can people find you?
Oh, well, you can find me at Twitter at E-P-I-C-C-I-U-T-O, E-Pacciuto. And I would like to plug the publication I am associate editor of. And we do publish a lot of philosophy pieces, Arc Digital.
That's fantastic. That's where I found this piece. And I highly recommend that. I follow Elizabeth and I recommend everybody follow her as well. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. And we've got to do our end of show things.
So yeah, thank you to I Protest, the Orange County Comptroller, and thank you to my favorite OA host is Redacted. Good crossover there. Thanks very much.
All right, and we also have to plug what we're doing next week. Aaron, what are we looking at next week up here in space?
Yeah, so next week we're going to do a short story. It's one that I actually shared in the Philosophers in Space Facebook group a little while back. It's called Today I Am Paul, and we'll make that available again ahead of time. And it's a really, to me, it's a really great tearjerker short story about the use of artificial intelligence in end-of-life elder care. And I think it does a really great job being sort of hewing close to what we will be seeing in our lifetimes with these kinds of issues. So I'm excited to talk about the ethics really of the use of AI.
Looking forward to that. Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, you know what time it is. It is time, if you are a patron, for us to hop on over to After Dark. And Elizabeth is kind enough to stay with us for that. If not, we'll see you all next week.
That's all for the main show, but if you'd like to go to patreon.com/zeroG, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
So what do we want to talk about first? Do we want to talk about boobies, or do we want to talk about how this is really a
satire? That was more of a joke, but yeah.
This has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/zeroG. You can find us on Twitter at zeroG Philosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.